Jesus Christ, according to St. Matthew. Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea. Such great crowds gathered round him that he got into a boat and sat there, while the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, "Listen, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and ate them up. Other seeds fell on rocky ground, where they did not have much soil, and they sprang up quickly, since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. Other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Let anyone with ears listen. Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. This is what was sown on the path. As for that which was sown on rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet such person has no root, but endures only for a while. And when trouble or persecution arises on account of the word, that person immediately falls away. As for what was sown among thorns, this is the one who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth choke the word, and it yields nothing. But as for what was sown on good soil, this is the one who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and yields, in one case 100-fold, in another 60, and in another 30. The Gospel of the Lord. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Well, they say Americans don't follow soccer, but they do follow the World Cup. And today, of course, is the final. Germany, which is favored, versus Argentina. So we know that Pope Benedict, the German, the Rottweiler, is praying today for Germany. And we know that the sitting Pope Francis is praying for Argentina. So my prayers are tiebreakers. If we are not out by 12 and you see me watching my Twitter feed, you know what's going on. Should be a fun game. Today we have a summertime gospel. It's a summertime gospel because Jesus has moved to the lake. It's gotten too stuffy back there in Nazareth in the hill country. And so he has moved to Capernaum on the edge of Lake Galilee, where there's nice breeze and good fish. And they're out of range of Hamas rockets way up there in the north part of the Galilee. And Jesus, in fact, makes his home there in Capernaum for the rest of his ministry. He ventures now and again down to Jerusalem when he has duties in Jerusalem, work to do there. But it is dangerous in Jerusalem, and the rabbi always makes his road trip back home to Capernaum by the beach. So maybe summertime Jesus is a little relaxed today there by the beach. We are told he goes out of town. He goes down by the sea. He takes a picnic, and he gets in the boat, and the crowds gather around, and he teaches them in parables. Paul Ricoeur is a theologian that helped me a good deal with the idea of sin. Ricoeur says that sin is fallibility and fault, the nexus of fallibility and fault and human finitude, and the impossibility for even the best of us to achieve the good that we intend. That would fit if we were talking about the book of Romans today, which we're not going to do. Ricoeur elsewhere talked about parables, and he said that parables are always scandalous. There's always something scandalous and a little embarrassing about a parable, because the purpose of a parable is to disorient us and then to help us or allow us, give us space to reorient in a new way. Jesus is trying to disorient us in this parable. Right away, we realize that we are not reading a manual about agricultural productivity. If you go to a friend of yours' house, remember Cynthia Hall, man, was she a great gardener, and you say, these are such incredible gardens, such beautiful gardens, you would not expect your gardening friend to say, yeah, opened up the door and threw out a couple of bags of seeds one day, and there it is. Gardens don't work like that, do they? They take cultivation and attention, and in Cynthia Hall's case, a whole staff, in order to bring forth the kind of growth and yield that was wanted. My grandfather, on my mother's side, was a terrific gardener. And he had annual beds and he had perennial beds and his orchards were perfect and he had gardens and he knew the name and provenance of every tree and rhododendron and bush on his acreage. I missed that gene. So tried to plant some cilantro. This is not a tough plant to grow. It sprung up like the seeds on the path. And the next time I walked by, it was gone. The sun is hot in Pasadena. Libby Lentz, caretaker, brought up a lot of Libby Lentz cymbidiums for me, about 20 after Libby passed. Libby had indicated that I might like those cymbidiums, and they have all huddled around my orange tree. And I remember to water them every day after I've gone to bed. So I'm beginning to worry about Libby's cymbidiums, which are near and dear to my heart. Not all of us have green thumbs. So there is in today's parable woe and blessing for all of us whose activities are not always quantifiable and measurable. That applies to some more than others. I used to tell Kevin Lake, you know, I really envy you. You get to go to Nicaragua and treat somebody and see whether it's made a difference. That must be tremendously satisfying, and indeed it was for Kevin. But what about you educators out there who work with children year in and year out and are not quite sure, Eli, what the fruit of your labor might be? Or social workers, or well-intended politicians can't always quantify the fruit of your labor. Clergy know nothing about that, of course. We have direct standards of measurement as to whether we're getting 100-fold yield, 60-fold yield, or none at all. It can be a little hard to fall in love with somebody and then, you know, one Sunday they're no longer in the pews and they never are again, despite stalking them by email. Sometimes you're just not sure what all those thousand sermons came to. Parents have this experience with their children. It's so heartening to hear experts now reminding parents that young people really do hear, they really do listen. The seed takes root much more than many parents are aware of. Their children are tending to what you say. All of us have shared endeavor in the lives of the young people committed to our care. I think this parable speaks to all of us because there is a fair measure of unpredictability in every one of our lives. We don't remember everything. We can't seem to get everything done. Despite our perfectionism, Michael Harrigan, it doesn't always turn out the way we want. It can be discouraging to lose contact with people that we really care about. And yet, the days pass and the relationships diminish. So much gets lost in human life. We can read so much into these parables. And by the way, theologians of old have read a lot into these parables. Hilary of Poitiers, a 4th-century bishop, got no further than the third verse, when Jesus sat down in the boat. And then he wrote a treatise about how that boat signified the church. That's all the further he got. Jerome got all the way down to where they're talking about 100-fold, 60-fold, 30-fold. He said 100-fold are monks and nuns, the monastics, the truly faithful. He said, and then the 60-fold, those are dedicated widows. And then the 30-fold, those are those people who get married. Calvin said, that's ridiculous. Jerome was ridiculous. Clearly the seed is theology. And those who yield 100-fold are those who have right theology. So if you want good yield, speak to me on the close. I'll straighten your theology out. What is that seed anyway? And what's that soil? Are we supposed to take the pH of our soil? This could be a nerve-wracking parable, particularly for us, because we suspect that we might be the ones who the cares of the world and the pursuit of wealth choke. Because our culture is not a slow culture. We hurtle along, don't we? I thought it was only the Ohio State Buckeyes who were 5 yards in a cloud of dust, but it's all of you. I watch your lives. You hurtle along. You leave dust in your wake. You're never off the cell phone. Did you hear this week about the experiment that they did with a group of men? They shocked them. They showed them how to give low-level shocks to themselves. They were painful. And then they put them in a room for 15 minutes, and they said, you can sit in silence, or, since there's nothing else to do, you can shock yourself. One guy shocked himself 109 times. Rather than staying alone with his own thoughts for 15 minutes, he shocked himself 109 times. I think he was hoping his Twitter account would come up on the inside of his eyelashes, you know? We hurtle along through lives. Where are our cell phones? We suspect that we might be the ones whose lives are choked. And so we're back to Hillary's boat. I like that imagery. One of the reasons we come to church is to hear the word at a slant. Hillary and Jerome and Calvin had their interpretation. Here's mine. My interpretation of this parable comes down to one word. I think what Jesus was really saying to us was, listen. Listen to your own life. Try and sit still in a room for 15 minutes with your own thoughts. What might God be doing around you and in you and through you and beside you and behind you and over there and right here? What is God doing in your life? Because God's seed is everywhere. God's seed is all around us. We're in a haze of dandelion seed and heavy barley seed. God's seed is in your heart. If you can listen and be attentive to the rhythms of your own life and give it a chance to grow. It is World Cup season. My little 4-year-old nephew was running up the other day sticking soccer stickers, little soccer balls, on anybody who would have them, anybody in the room, giving away his beloved soccer ball stickers as quickly as he could. So generous. God is generous and profligate in scattering the seed. We ought also be generous and profligate in our lives with the way that we love and our attitude toward others. Do you ever feel that you are loving somebody too much, or that you are dedicating too much of yourself to a project that you are committed to, or too much of yourself to your parish church? You're just giving too much. And by the way, where is the measurable yield? I mean, how many boxes are you really going to check when you walk out of church today? Probably not a one. Made it. Got up. That's the only box you'll check. What use is this time? Dave Ford is shocking himself back there. Sermon time. Move on. We don't need to worry about our yield. We just need to love insouciantly. In biblical archaeology, last month, there was a conversation about an archaeologist who discovered it, Masada, a date seed, 2,000 years old, one of the stash seeds that remained in that fortress. Her name was Sarah Salon from the Hadasha Medical Foundation. She planted the seed. It grew. It's now 3 feet tall. Spiritual DNA is relentless. It is resolute. It resides in you. God has placed it there. Take a deep breath with Summertime Jesus. Get yourself down to the lake. Listen to your own life. Be insouciant in the way that you love. And your yield will be hundredfold, 60-fold, 30-fold. That's not your business.